Hello and welcome to this special episode of the Yellow and Blue podcast, recorded the day after that unbelievable match between India and Pakistan at Melbourne in the T20 World Cup. I'd like to start with wishing all the podcast listeners a very happy Diwali. And it was a great Diwali gift it was from Virat Kohli. I will obviously be talking about that match and other matches from the T20 World Cup and also look ahead to the rest of India's games in the company of a very special guest, our first ever guest on this podcast, Ajit, the host of Armchair Cricket Podcast, who, in his own words, is a test aficionado first and foremost, fan of the Indian cricket team, but also very knowledgeable on Netherlands cricket, who are the next opposition for Team India in the T20 World Cup. Hello, Ajit. Happy Diwali and welcome to Hello and Blues Podcast.
Hello, Srini. Thanks for having me. And hello to all your listeners. And I wish you and all your listeners also happy Deepavali or Diwali.
Yeah. Before we discuss kind of cricket, Ajit, let's start about you and your podcast, the Armchair Cricket Podcast. You've obviously been going on it much longer than, you know, I've been or we've been doing this podcast. So tell us a bit about like your cricketing journey and how did you get into cricketing podcast?
Right. So, I mean, I think you told me off air that you heard one of my very first podcasts and you heard some recent ones. So first of all, thanks for that. We can always use more listeners. But to start off, yes, we started this podcast as an outlet for all the cricket we used to watch. And after having watched all the cricket, you needed an outlet where you would either talk to it, talk about cricket to your friends, or you would maybe just run a mic while you do it. That's basically how our podcast started. From there, I would like to think we picked up a few tips along the way. And for me, it remains, that is still my main motivation. It remains an outlet for me to sort of put out my thoughts about the cricket world and how it's shaping up and how games are going on.
In terms of then, do you actually play cricket in the Netherlands? Tell us a bit about cricket in the Netherlands and like, you know, is it a lot more of, do you just do more watching cricket, like, you know, or do you actually play as well?
Yes, I do play cricket in the Netherlands. So I play for a club called Kiwief and I play in one of the lower amateur leagues. So we have 4 amateur leagues, 3 professional leagues, and 2 recreational leagues in the Netherlands. So there is no other organized cricket outside of this. There are some tournaments that are conducted. So all of these leagues I told you are conducted by the KNCB, which is the BCCI equivalent. Every club, so it's club level cricket, just like, for example, Sri Lanka. And we don't have organized cricket at a state level or a province level, or we don't have all of those. So what we have are clubs that play, and so you can put forward a team and you can start at the lowest amateur league level and you can grow from there. Every year you can get promoted and so on. In the top 3 leagues, which are the professional leagues, you will mostly find all the Dutch players playing there. Right. So I play in one of the lower amateur leagues. I'm a leg break bowler and a middle order batsman. Well, more lower middle to tail ender these days, but I still bowl.
And so in terms of like, you know, cricket in Netherlands, is there a lot of like, you know, homegrown players now, or, you know, us, or is it a lot more expat based?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think Netherlands are trying to find the balance between homegrown players, where they are trying to promote more and more of their own players that have come through the system here, and balancing it out with professionals that are qualifying to play for the Netherlands in one format or the other, or in one way or the other, and who can bring the experience. So, for example, if you look at the match that happened today, so when I look at the 11, I'm just taking this as the latest example we have. So we have Vikramjit Singh, who grew up here. Bastel Lida is a local grown player. And then you have Shariz Ahmed. So in this 11, these 3 are purely homegrown Dutch talents that have sort of come through the age groups here. And the rest of them are professionals. On a given day, maybe there are more homegrown players as well. But this is a World Cup stage. They'll probably do well with a lot more experience in the 11. So this is usually how the Dutch playing 11 is composed of.
And in terms of the cricketing season then, is it played a lot of like sort of mat-based cricket, etc.? Or is it like, you know, do you get to play like proper pitches, etc.?
So it's a combination. So basically every club has its own premises. most of us, we have a club where it's usually multi-sport club. So for example, Kiwi, we play in northwest of Amsterdam. And this club hosts on the same ground football or rugby during winter. And during summer, we have cricket. So basically, the cricket pitch is between two football pitches or two rugby pitches, right? So that's how it is. And usually the pitch is AstroTurf. It's not matting, but it's slightly higher quality. And you would see this across multiple clubs in the Netherlands. There are about four or five clubs in the Netherlands who have their own grass wickets. VRA is one, which has an international ground. So for example, there's one in Rotterdam called, which is basically Feyenoord, but they're called Kausia. They also have their own actual grass wicket where I've been lucky enough to bowl on both these places. So I can tell you that. So there are few like that who own their own premises who have actually some international status. There's one called Woorburg, probably you can compare it to anywhere in New Zealand. It's one of the most beautiful grounds, I would claim, anywhere in the world. There's one called Bloemendaal and so on. So there are some very historic clubs. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but Netherlands has organized cricket from the 1890s. They have records going back so far. The KNCB. So the word K, which stands for Koninklijk, which means royal, it is only given to an organization that's more than 100 years old. So KNCB is more than 100 years old. So we have a long and much storied history of organized cricket in this country. And to answer your question, we play between end of April to first week of September, mostly the summer season, early summer to end late summer. And so in the lower leagues, you can expect to have 14 games each summer. In the recreational leagues, 12, 10 games. But in the higher leagues, they play, I think, 22 games per summer. And the highest format that they actually play is a 50-over game. And we all use the ICC 50-over rules for all the our games.
That leads nice segue into my next question, which was going to be like, you know, is that a lot of, Saturday or Sunday sort of, you know, 50-over cricket, or do you do like a T20 stuff? I mean, So me and my co-host Venkat, who is actually not with us today, so we tend to play obviously like league cricket here, you know, which is predominantly either 40, 45 overs. Saturday cricket, you know, obviously England, because we live in England, and, you know, there's obviously huge cricket here. But also we tend to play like, you know, a lot of midweek 2020 leagues. So how is that, what in terms of 2020, given, you know, we're talking about World Cup and kind of, you know, Netherlands chances, we'll talk about that. So how is the 2020 cricket in Netherlands?
So the 2020 cricket is mostly, so there are a couple of tournaments that are organized by KNCB. So you have LKT20 and TKT20, so lower class and top class T20. So as I said, the top three leagues, which are professional leagues, there is a T20 tournament conducted for all the clubs that are there. There is a T20 tournament conducted for all the teams in the lower leagues as well. So every club can have one team there. This is an official competition organized by KNCB. And this happens mostly on Friday evenings. Our league games happen on Saturday or Sunday, right? And I play a 40-over format. The highest three leagues, they play 50. The lower leagues, the amateur leagues, we play 40 or 45. What do you say? The recreational leagues can be 30 or 35. And outside of this, there's a lot of T20 tournament, which is corporate tournaments. So there is a very thriving corporate league here where all the corporate teams have their own entities that play. Outside of that, for example, in the club I play, we do our own T20 tournament internally. So we have enough players that we can try and do a tournament, a 5 or a 6-team tournament every year, depending on how many want to participate. So this is more or less the scene of T20 tournaments. And there are other clubs who also have an invitational tournament. Maybe that's a weekend. Maybe that's like over 2 to 3 weekends. There is one called Boss Premier League, which is actually organized by somebody I know, which is like he starts at the end of September almost, and he finishes in 3 weekends. It's purely a T20 tournament. So this is also taking place. These are all independent tournaments.
That's interesting. So there is definitely a lot of cricket being played in the Netherlands. We're talking about the Netherlands kind of. We'll have in a moment or two, we'll look at, like, you know, the Netherlands, how they've been so far in the World Cup and ahead, you know, but let's kind of roll back and focus on probably the first couple of weeks in terms of the T20 World Cup so far. Obviously, Netherlands kind of played in the qualifying round, and they beat UAE and Namibia, and then they lost Sri Lanka, and then Bangladesh this morning, today. But what have you made so far? What's your thoughts on the World Cup so far? I mean, New Zealand thumped Australia, which was a surprise. England and Sri Lanka obviously won comfortably against Afghanistan and Ireland. And then I talked about the big game, yesterday that we obviously touched at the beginning of the podcast. But so far, what's been your take on, the qualification week and then the first week so far?
So I'll go back to your first questions on Netherlands. So I think three episodes ago on my own podcast, I had said, I'll be very happy if Netherlands can win even one game in the World Cup. They made me ecstatic by, first of all, winning two games. And through a stroke of luck, they qualified. So that's, double bonus as far as I'm concerned as a Dutch fan. So they are now guaranteed five games against the big teams. And it's unfortunate they lost the first of those against Bangladesh, even though I must say they finished much better than where they could have. It could have been a little bit more of a disaster. But this is Netherlands. When I look at the tournament overall, so I was obviously quite disappointed at the turnout where West Indies couldn't make it. So that was a bit of a disappointment for me. I was happy Sri Lanka came through. And, Zimbabwe, I expected they will come through. They are sort of in a very good form this year in T20. So I expected Zimbabwe will come. They did. So if you look at the four qualifiers, right? So you have Ireland, Sri Lanka, and then you have Netherlands and Zimbabwe. So in this group, so from that perspective, the only team I felt I sort of miss is West Indies because they're twice former winners. They did not really look up to it. And the results rightly reflected that. The way Ireland beat them, it could have been any big team, any top league team just playing against West Indies, 154-1 chasing 146. So comfortable was the victory, and West Indies didn't turn up. So they don't deserve to be here, and they're not here. That's one thing. So that's a bit disappointing for me because I'm always a big fan of the West Indian style of play as well as West Indian team itself. Outside of that, if I look at the remainder of the games, so yeah, the hiding that Australia were handed was quite a surprise. So, Australia, you can never write them off, especially when they're playing at home, which they are currently. So it was such a big surprise, the hiding that New Zealand were able to hand out to them. It'll take some doing for Australia to come back because they have such a huge negative net run rate. And New Zealand have such a huge positive net run rate, right? And then Afghanistan, England, for me, it more or less went on expected lines. But I expected Afghanistan will fight a bit more. The 112 they made, I expected they'll go to 140 or so, because the moment they get to 140, their spinners become very potent. England did not simply chase this with no effort, right? So they were 113 for five, and it took them into the 19th over to chase it. This is the first day of games. Second day of games, well, you see now, even though Ireland did well and they came up to the through the qualifiers, the moment they hit the big league, Sri Lanka is now a big league team. They're acting and they're playing like a big league team, and that's how they showed it. It was a comfortable victory for them. And well, I think we should talk about yesterday's big game. So I think I'll let you summarize that for us.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday's big game, I think for sure, it lived up to the hype. Year in, year out, it's no surprise, the ICC in every tournament, whether it's the T20 World Cup, the Champions Trophy, the World Cup, etc., it's almost like they try and put India and Pakistan in the same group to have that India-Pakistan match, because not just broadcasting viewership and all of those things, it's a money spinner at the ground, looking at it yesterday, in fact, 90,000 plus people actually in the ground being there. The Australia-England game, whether they will get that kind of thing, the fan following, it is something completely different. So the ICC almost call it fixed, whatever you want to call it, however you want to put it. It's a money spinner, and on one side, the commercially, broadcasting wise, and then there is the actual hype. Year on year, the hype's been, especially if people, who are in the UK and who don't follow, if on sort of Indian TV channel, the Star Sports and stuff like that, you would think there is no World Cup going on. It's just an India-Pakistan game that's going to happen in Australia. That's just the way they build it.
That was a good point you started off with. It was, the advertisement has reached crazy levels on both sides, right? And you remember the Mocha Mocha songs a while back. Recently, it was Rock advertising the game. So, you know, it was almost Akshay Kumar level of advertisement where he had a poster of his film in the background. And in the foreground, he was just talking about the India-Pakistan clash. So this is how much of a marquee game it is. So, I mean, when it comes to promoting, I mean, I think neither side leaves a single stone unturned on promoting this game.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I did see The Rock one and it was like, you know, surprised. But having said all of those things, yesterday's game did live up to the hype. I mean, we can, you know, I think for most India fans or probably fans of, you know, it here in England, you know, it's obviously the Ashes is the biggest thing, you know. But for us kind of India fans, the India-Pakistan game is the biggest, you know, no matter how big Ashes or how much history the Ashes has, it will never surpass this. Leaving aside, like, you know, yes, the political and all of those things, I think it's fair to say from a cricket fan's perspective, it's no longer about the politics of it. The games or themselves, you know, having what the sort of rarity, if you like, you know, in terms of the lack of bilateral series and all of those things, you know, kind of builds up the fact that these two teams, yes, they probably met quite a few times this year, you know, because of the Asia Cup and just the T20 World Cup happening last year. Now the T20 World Cup this year, then there's a World Cup coming up next year. So there will probably be a number of them in the space of 2-3 years. But in general, I think historically there would have been only like one World Cup every 4 years, and then there's a Champions Trophy, etc. But we obviously see it a lot more now. So it's probably not the same level of pressure, I want to say, but I think looking at it yesterday, it did feel like, you know, the pressure levels were definitely high. We can obviously talk about the kind of Virat Kohli element of it. You know, he, similar to, I think what you said about a bit earlier about the Netherlands, kind of, you know, saying they wouldn't win any games. Earlier, back in the podcast, I said, like, you know, Virat Kohli will definitely go to the World Cup. But if I was picking the team, I wouldn't pick him. He wouldn't have been in my starting 11. This was pre Asia Cup. But obviously, like, you know, and to be honest, I think there were other people who were performing better and kind of, you know, deserved their opportunities there. That was kind of my view to say, like, you know, on balance, yes, he will go. It's just a brand Virat Kohli kind of, you know, will take him to the 11. But if you were to pick it on form, you wouldn't pick him. But then he showed yesterday, like, you know, it's the old adage or cliche that they keep saying in cricket, like, you know, form is temporary, class is permanent.
So, going to this game and Virat Kohli, right? So, indeed, he's been going through a trough by his own high standards. He's always been scoring runs. The hundreds were not there. It was such a talking point. But he broke that, drought. He scored 100. It was an inconsequential game. But what that game showed was a bit more than he was building up to it through the Asia Cup. In that inconsequential match against Afghanistan, he hit 100. He accelerated smoothly, right? So, and for me, from that point on, he began again deserving a place in the 11. So before that, if you ask me after the IPL this year, I would have said, maybe does he need to be there? Probably, if you go back a few episodes of my own podcast, I probably even openly expressed this sentiment. But he made a comeback, and what a comeback it was. He already, for me, was already ready in his mind to be a part of the World Cup. In the Asia Cup, he showed that. Then coming to yesterday's game, look, if I were to look a little bit into yesterday's game, so you have Shaan Masood at number 3 for Pakistan. You have Kohli at number 3 for India, right? So Shaan Masood yesterday showed his value. So when the top order does not deliver, those two top heavy scorers, Rizwan and Babar Azam, if they fail, or if both of them fail, you need somebody like Shaan Masood, who's like a backup opener. Shaan Masood yesterday could not pick up his scoring rate towards the end, but still he did his job scoring at around 125, keeping the innings together. You see, if you look at that partnership between him and Iftikhar hit out. And Iftikhar got out, I was not happy. I remember telling my roommate, I'm not so sure if he did the right thing. If I were Iftikhar, I would have taken it 2 more overs in, right? And then they had a collapse. So from there to 120 for 7, a lot of credit to India, the way they bowled throughout the innings, frankly, except for the last 2 overs, where I think Shaheen Shah Afridi suddenly came out of nowhere, bashed 15-16, and then what could be potentially 145 became 160, a target, right? So that one over, which you really never expected Akshar Patel to go so bad. But then the way they came back through Shami and Hardik Pandya was wonderful for me. So 160 is an on-par total for me on that pitch. And when you know the bowling attack is Pakistan, that's above par. Because you have three bowlers who are all three capable of 145 plus. And you have two bowlers who are really close to the top of their mark in Naseem Shah and Harish Rauf. Shaheen Shah Afridi is coming back. And you saw a bit of gingerness as well, right? So for me, at the halfway mark, the game was still very much poised. Pakistan probably 53 against India's 47. So how did you think the rest of the innings went, the game went?
India, let's look at the India kind of batting. I mean, pre-game, one of the things that Rohit Sharma said was like, you know, he's challenged the Indian middle order to be ready for when it's 10 for 2. That's a nice challenge too, like, you know, when you're talking. But I think it's not a challenge you want to put like sort of 24-4 or the odd, you know, whatever India were in the middle of this big game. Mm. You know, you don't want to actually say, right, I'm going to test you. I found that quite funny when, like, you know, the memes kind of started flowing out to say, yeah, it's nice to say that, you know, it's good. But I think post that partnership of 100 runs, well, you know, you look at it in the end, you look at, you know, everybody focuses on those last two sixes of Kohli sixes, you know, and Hardik Pandya, etc. There was a period in between, I think, about where India, Kohli's kind of initial, he was what, was 12 or something of 21 balls, etc. I think at the beginning stages. And then there was also a period where, like, you know, Hardik Pandya struggling. I think I might have tweeted during the game to say, like, you know, when India needed like 60 of the last five overs, that, like, you know, had India left it too late. History tells you, like, you know, looking at the IPL and all of those things and other T20 crickets, 12 run and over is not that big a deal. Lots of teams score 12 and over off the last five. It's not that big. But considering the bowling of Pakistan, it wasn't going to be easy to score 12 and over. It needed, like, you know, seriously, an extraordinary innings from Virat Kohli. In fact, they moved from like needing 12 and over to about 16 and over in the last three overs. It was like 48 needed of the last three.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, you can't do that every match. It's a one-off sort of thing. I mean, Kohli can probably do it, but, you know, knowing him, like, Hardik Pandya was obviously struggling at that. In fact, I was about to actually tweet when he got out saying, like, you know, I think Hardik Pandya's sort of torturous existence in the last over or so has come to an end. It in some ways was good that he got out, because he just didn't seem to, like, you know, sort of get back to ball in that 17th, 18th overish period. It's just fortunate, like, you know, to get Kohli to hit those couple of sixes. And the last over was it was completely, like, you know, bonkers, probably is a word I might use, in terms of not just from India's batting perspective, but from the bowling perspective, in terms of, like, you know, Nawaz actually going to bowl medium pace rather than spin that he was bowling all the way.
So, you know, I'll go a couple of overs back. So let's start 17th over, right? 18th over, let's say. So first of all, Kohli hit Shaheen Shah Afridi for those three fours. That's the beginning of that chase. And so if you have Hardik Pandya and if you need 60 of 30, you would still have hope. You would say, you know, this guy is there, and you would expect Kohli to be the guy who would feed him the strike. And Hardik Pandya, he did it earlier in the Asia Cup, where you remember those memes with him nodding to Karthik, don't worry, we are under control, so on, right? So that's what it was sort of set up. There is 1 hour of Nawaz to come, right? I remember talking to my roommate, and my roommate telling, don't worry, there's 1 hour of Nawaz. They'll even score 20 of that. Don't worry. So then the question is, did they leave Nawaz over till the end? Was it too late? Was it not a good thing? But I think it was. So when you have, if I were in Babar Azam's shoes, and I have 1 hour each of Naseem, Shaheen, and Harris, and one of Naseem, one of Nawaz, I will bowl it at the end. If the required is beyond 20, the match is actually dead in the water. Even if it's a spinner, you cannot expect three sixers. That might happen one in 50 matches of such situations. So because Nawaz is also a professional bowler, so he's also very good, right? So then, first of all, those three fours that Kohli hit of the last over of Shaheen Shah sort of kicked off that spark. Next comes those two sixers of Haris Rauf, the last two balls. I mean, I think those two sixers, that first six, which he backed off of a hard test match length to just lift it straight. I don't know what sort of confidence, what sort of training you need, what sort of strength you need. I can't even imagine hitting that carrying a 90 meters. Good God, that shot. Then, so the way it was chased down was almost miraculous. You're absolutely right when you say it may not happen again, at least in this tournament. It may not even happen again in Kohli's career. We don't know. But such a game where Kohli was perfectly at that point where Hardik is really struggling. He's unable to do anything. So I think they had prepared well for Hardik. If you bowl at his chest height outside of the ostrich, he has nothing to do. He has no answer. And he did not have any answers if you kept looking at that length. On the other hand, Kohli is able to manufacture good strokes, right? Because he's a more correct technical batsman. He's able to hit that through extra cover. He's able to... That exact length was the one he just whacked straight past Haris Rauf's head for a six. The look on Haris Rauf's face when that went for a six. Again, something you'll not forget. So, then comes those... So, 8 balls, 28 runs. I remember turning to my roommate and saying, India will lose by anywhere between 9 to 13 runs. Very analytical, very cool. I say that. I said they're going to hit, but they're going to lose by anywhere between 9 or 13 runs. Those two sixes come. Then I'm like, you know what, hang on. I'm not so sure anymore. So then, you know what, you'll think Hardik will wake up now. It's the last over. It's his favorite bowler, air quotes, Nawaz. What he needs is two sixers. He can do this. Then he gets out of the first ball. I mean, what a crazy last over. Kartik comes in. Kartik looks nervous, right? Kartik is able to only take a single. Then they run a very, very desperate double. Still, it's very, very tough for India to win from this point. Then comes that turning point. Was it a no ball or not?
I think it was no ball. Although I would probably also edge to say, like, you know, Kohli slightly pushed the umpires to give it a no ball. And this went back to the ball before that, actually, like, you know, the one that Kartik faced.
Precisely.
That was, you know, sort of waist high, and the no ball wasn't given. And I think, yeah, that may have had an influence in terms of this being. It definitely was a marginal call. It just reminds me back to, like, I think the World Cup in Australia, the one that was given no ball. I think Rohit Sharma's catch, wasn't it, against Bangladesh? Bangladesh made a huge thing about, like, no, he was never a no ball, and I know that changed the match and stuff. But it's kind of similar to this. Marginal, I think, you know, on-field umpires, yeah, they gave the no ball. But it was the ball after that, well, not the ball after that, which was the wide, but then the free hit on which Kohli was bowled.
Yeah.
Which then caused a huge sort of, you know.
You're right. So, you know, you're right. So, a lot of fortuitous things also happened for India. One, the second high full toss of the over, the umpire sort of, you know, it's almost instinctive you give the second one as a no ball. If I look at it, when I looked at it real time, I thought it was very marginal. When I looked at it later, it was clear enough it could be given a no ball. Not by itself, because it's the second one in the over. Right? That's exactly correct. Then that him being bowled and the ball actually running away to short third man or running away to third man. Again, very, very unlucky, because that could have straight away gone to the keeper's hand and maybe no run would have resulted. Then again, right? And that point onwards, 2 of 2, and then Kartik sort of fumbling it, getting out. Rizwan doing a wonderful job there, I thought. Right? So if you remember, Rizwan started standing like fast bowlers. How you would stand for fast bowlers, you're standing at the back. So and Nawaz sort of bowling fastish, right? That was also very interesting. So that way, if you look at it, I'm thinking a lot of things fell in place for India to have chased this down. And what I would like to take away from it is that move by Ashwin. I think it's become a meme now, how he left that wide go.
It looks so easy, but it requires a calm and coolness to, like, you know, as probably a spinner kind of think, like, no, right, he's just going to, if I move back, especially having seen Kartik the ball before, if I move to the leg, he's going to follow me and just stay still. And it'll get, it's almost what I think he would say, or, you know, in terms of game of chess, if you like, you know, who's going to,
Exactly.
it's almost Dhoni-esque in terms of who is going to blink first, the bowler or the batsman. And he says, it'll probably be most often than not the bowler.
You know, if you look at it, it was the same ball, or more or less the same ball, that got Karthik dismissed. Right? And he had bit of up. He expected, Ashwin is a more air quotes classical batsman, right? You would expect he would loft straight. So he thought he's going to make room and loft straight. So the ball, but then Ashwin was just standing. He didn't do any of those things. So that is the sheer genius of that moment, where Ashwin just let the ball go. It was almost like, oh, okay, I'm happy. You're bowling there. I'm not going to move. So that's that. And then his calm presence to simply loft the ball. It was a foolish ball and there was no turn on it. There was no flight. So one thing, if anything, I can maybe say Nawaz got up. I think he got a bit panicky, very bold, an additional wide, even when trying to, you know, bowl a good ball for the free hit. That's not a bad idea. If, when you have so many runs, you'd rather bowl a wide and then bowl a dot ball or a single conceding ball, right? That's okay. Unfortunately for him, a lot of things didn't pan out. He was very unlucky there, Nawaz, I think.
That just tells you, like, you know, it's sometimes it's just close margins. That's kind of like, you know, good summary on that one. I mean, we talked about sort of, you know, you base pace and kind of Netherlands on the background, and obviously India's next match is Netherlands. So I know you mentioned in terms of, like, you know, from Netherlands' perspective, winning of the couple of matches, and now they've got at least five more games. You know, they lost a very close match. You're right. You know, I was watching the back end of the game today, and in some ways, I was thinking, like, no, actually, if Bangladesh win this by a big margin, you know, again, it was similarly the Australian, New Zealand sort of, Bangladesh are going to have, like, you know, a big plus net run rate. Whereas in some ways, I'm kind of happy that, you know, Netherlands lost, but they only lost by 9, so which means the net run rate isn't gone for Bangladesh that far ahead. They are, like, you know, sort of, even though they are on the top of the table, it's just slightly. But talking about Netherlands, though, it's like, you know, their next few games, you know, starting with, you know, India on Thursday, and then they followed by Pakistan, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. So, who's, like, you know, so what would you say are their strengths, bowling or batting?
So, definitely their bowling is stronger than their batting as things stand. So, they're really going to struggle to chase anything around 140. We saw it today, right? So, for them to chase something around 140, their top three will have to come good, which didn't happen today. Right. And I think Ackerman played out of his skin to be, you know, scoring at 130 and keeping that innings together till the very end, even though, as you can see, there are only three scorers with double digits. And Scott Edwards sort of looked uncomfortable. I expected he would actually make up some of the runs. Tom Cooper, again, very disappointing World Cup so far for me. So if you look at overall, from the bowling attack perspective, I don't expect too many changes in the Dutch 11, because so Paul van Wickeren did a wonderful job, right? Logan van Beek, wonderful job once more. I mean, Fred Klaassen, he went for a few runs, but he's their fastest bowler and he has some of the best finishing in the team, right? So then comes the question about Tim Pringle, good with the ball, not so good with the bat today, but that can happen. So I expect, because Rolo Fandamarma is injured, they will have a more or less a similar bowling composition come the game against India. When it comes to batting, they may look to replace Tom Cooper. So when I look at the side, I don't see too many ready options. So Tom Cooper may get one more opportunity, right? But for them, really, if they win the toss, they will look to bowl first once more. Try and tie India down, right? That's their obvious strength. Because on the other hand, if they get to bat first, there is a real chance India may bundle them out for 100 or so. So that's the way I see this game panning out from a Dutch perspective.
Yeah, I think from an Indian perspective, you know, Rohit and Rahul, I really think Rahul needs some runs. You know, it does feel like the rest of the team is carrying Rahul at the moment. There is the odd, I mean, granted, like, you know, he's been unlucky with injuries and COVID and stuff, you know, for a period of time. He's definitely got the talent, you know, and all of those things. But I do feel right now a bit like India are carrying him at the minute. You know, there is only so long a rope he can probably get into the World Cup. India can't go into, like, you know, every game with both of them failing, you definitely need either Rohit Sharma or Rahul. Rohit Sharma, I'm not that fussed about, like, you know, he'll definitely come good, you know, he's kind of like a big match player. But Rahul does need, or what's your thoughts on should India look at, like, you know, actually it probably won't happen with the Netherlands game because it's too early to make changes, but in terms of actually getting in Rishabh Pant and sort of opening as a left-hander?
Interesting question. So, for me, India's top order is completely right-handed dominated. That's why they sent Akshar up the order, right? To try and make life difficult for the leg break bowler as well as the left-arm spinner. It didn't work. But in that case, this is as good a game as any to try out their bench, right? So, I'm going to go with a bold suggestion. Kohli looks fine. Rest him. Surya Kumar looks okay. Rest him. Rest both of them. Give Rishabh Pant a chance to bat at three, right? And look at maybe people like Deepak Hooda, right? Akshar should definitely get another game to try and get his confidence up because this is a match winner for you as well. Don't forget. So that's the way I look at it. I would say Bhuvneshwar Kumar can be rested. Shami should get more game time. He still looks a little ring rusty. So, for example, that's the way I would go about it. And definitely both Rahul and Rohit should play. And, well, if you go by all the internet chatter, Rahul is a stat padder, right? He will score runs this time. So that's good for him anyway. I mean, I don't care where the runs come from. He needs runs. And I'm hoping this is the game that he'll get them.
Yeah.
Same for Rohit. In fact, I think India are carrying Rohit longer.
Yeah. So this goes back to my point. Like, you know, so as I said, like, last T20 World Cup and stuff, Kohli kind of was playing because he was the captain. We've had this lots of arguments about, like, no, Kohli's not in form, he should be dropped. And I said, well, he's not going to be dropped because he's the captain. And that's now for Rohit Sharma. It's like, Rohit Sharma is the captain, so carrying or not, you know, he's not going to be dropped because there are players in India that are generally undroppable at times, you know, because there's a lot... People talk about it, but there are some players in India who always get a longer rope than they deserve. Some of them come through, some of them don't. But then once you become captain, it's kind of like you are undroppable and past captains also. So Rohit probably, yes, it's a bit of a... He does score sometimes and doesn't, but, you know, he'll play. And I like your suggestions, but I don't think India are going to make, or at least under Rahul Dravid, that massive a change. I don't think India or sort of that left field, especially Rahul Dravid, I can't see him being that left field. The odd change, yes, I see Kohli, especially after last game, I think Kohli's got a lot to... I mean, he probably is not playing stats and stuff like that. That's not what I'm saying. But I think he's got a lot of catch-up to do in terms of, you know, his own runs and stuff like that. He's missed out on a fair few hundred. So it's like, especially if India bat first, there is like the opportunity to fill in the boots. So it is, you know, that's probably one of those things.
Indeed.
Chahal, indeed, probably, you know, yeah, in place of Ashwin is another opportunity to try. So that's, yeah, we'll see. From another Netherlands perspective, though, what would you say is a successful tournament for them? Is just moving, getting through the qualifying round into the main would be considered a successful tournament, or do they expect to, like, you know, sort of win games against the likes of Zimbabwe, etc.?
Yeah, so I would say that's a potential result that they would be targeting. So I think they came into the tournament with the sight that insight, or they wanted a target of trying to win enough games to qualify. They've done that. Everything from here on in is a bonus, but I think they would like to sort out some of these issues that are ongoing. Maybe take down at least one big team. If they take down India, that'll be quite the surprise. But at least when it comes to playing, you know, South Africa can be a little bit vulnerable on their day as well. Maybe they can also target South Africa and Zimbabwe. So Pakistan, you know, Pakistan being Pakistan can be as mercurial. They had come here this summer and they thrashed Netherlands. So there's also a bit of payback. So I'm going to look at all of the upcoming Netherlands matches very carefully. You know, earlier I said something. I'm going to do a little bit of a walk back on that. There is Stephen Myberg in the squad. I had missed that earlier. He may actually take Cooper's role one for one, number four. Right? A very experienced batter. He did not have a successful summer earlier. He may be given a chance to prove himself. Right. So for me, Also, there's Teja Nidamanuru, who's sort of a lower middle order batsman and an all-rounder. He might come into the squad, but I don't think they'll do too much tinkering with the spin stocks. So for me, from Dutch perspective, they'll want to win at least one more game before they exit the tournament.
So based on I guess, you know, the action you've seen so far, from bookmakers and odds perspective, you know, I think Australia were the favorites, England second favorites, and India were third favorites. Who do you think is, if you had to bet, who would you bet on, like, you know, being, to win the World Cup right now?
So I would knock Australia off the top after that result. I would move them to number three, but the order would still, it'll be the same three teams. England are the first favorites, then come India, then come Australia for me. And I dare say there is a high likelihood, because you never write Pakistan off, there could be an India-Pakistan World Cup final, what we've all hoped for all our life. But in that case, I would still back India. So for me, it's those three. If it's an India-England, it will really depend on how the stalwarts on both sides turn up, right? It will be a high-scoring encounter. It will be high electricity, high octane encounter. And I expect, really, I can't predict that. So outside of that, I would say England are still odds-on favorite to win for me. Then come India. Then come Australia.
That's probably as good a note to, like, you know, wrap this week's podcast. And definitely like to thank you, Ajit, for sharing your time and thoughts, and look forward to collaborating with you more in the future. And if you haven't already done so, just please subscribe to this podcast and leave your reviews and ratings about the podcast on Spotify, Apple iTunes, Google Podcast, or any of the other platforms that you get. And we're also on Twitter at Yellow and Blue, so don't forget to follow us. And don't forget to listen and follow Ajit's Armchair Cricket Podcast. Until next week, this is your host, Srini, signing out. Goodbye.